We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All systems are go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Van
Vliet! Oh, baby! How are you, my friends? Welcome back to another audio adventure on Insight. I'm CVV, Chris Van Vliet, and wow. Yeah, you could check this off the bucket list. For years, I've been wanting to do an interview with The Undertaker, and here we are, episode number 452, and it is happening. If you've seen any of his out-of-character interviews that he's done, or if you watched his Hall of Fame speech from last year, you know that he's such a nice, warm, humble individual. Funny, too. And he has a couple of his One Dead Man shows coming up where you can see all this and experience all of this in person. March 24th at the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas. March 31st during WrestleMania week in Los Angeles. And if you happen to be in LA for WrestleMania, you can see me at WrestleCon. I'll be there for a few days and I'll also be at WrestleMania. So it'd be so awesome to see you, say hi, snap a photo, chat, whatever it is you want to do. It'd be so cool to be able to see who's on the other side of this microphone that I'm talking into right now. The Undertaker is just such a great storyteller, and that is on display in his One Dead Man show, but he does it during this interview. Just tells some great stories, some of them that he's never told before. So I was honored to be on the other side of that. And I just hope that you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. And I'm hoping that you'll share this with a friend and that you'll also snap a screenshot and tag us on social media so we can share it out as well. He is at Undertaker, not The Undertaker. He's just at Undertaker. I'm at Chris Van Vliet and Homebryonics, I see you. I appreciate this review on Apple Podcasts that says, Chris has an amazing ability to create a comfort zone so early on in his interviews that the good stuff flows early and flows easily. He is a pro's pro. I appreciate the very kind words, and I will keep reading one review on Apple Podcasts from Apple Podcasts on every single episode as my way to say thank you. Of course, this is free of charge. All you have to do is leave a few words on there. And if you happen to be listening on Spotify, if you could click those stars on there, it'd be so helpful as the show continues to grow. We're closing in on episode number 500, but man, if we've got The Undertaker for episode number 452, I don't know how we're going to top that for episode 500. So if you have any ideas, man, shoot me a message at Chris Van Vliet. Okay, let's get into this. Ladies and gentlemen, The Undertaker.
There he is, the man himself. Such a pleasure to be sitting down with you.
Thanks, Chris. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. You know, we've gotten to know you so well since your retirement, especially with the One Dead Man show. I'm curious, as we're getting to know you more, are you also getting to know yourself more?
I'm becoming more comfortable sharing myself. I can say that. I'm in touch with who I am and all that, but it has been a challenge to lower the curtain and lower the veil and let people see behind the hat and coat. I still find myself at times I'll get immersed into a story and I'll be halfway through the story and then I go, How much do this do I want to? How much? Because I fight it. You know, I'm a old school guy, and I don't think that'll ever change, regardless right. of you know how we progress and how we evolve. There's certain things that I struggle with, and that old school mentality of protect this and protect that. Well, I think will always be with me, but it's all, you know, I'm coming to grips with all of it.
When you talk about being an old school guy, you know, letting us kind of peek behind the curtain a little bit, mm-hmm. do you feel like, is kayfabe dead?
I think, I think kayfabe died for sure when I came out and started talking as Mark Calloway. I shouldn't say that. No, you know what? Because there are a few guys that are out there that are, they're living their gimmick and doing a really, really good job at that. And I think, obviously, we go out of our way now to let everybody know what sports entertainment is. But I think, and we did that even while I was working, right?
Right.
I mean, but the way I approach things, and even with my character and my over-the-top gimmick as, you know, as the Undertaker, especially the last probably 10, 15 years of my career, I really, the way I set my matches up, and I always tried to suspend that sense of reality. I didn't want people thinking like, I wanted people, when I threw a punch, I wanted people to go, that's different. Yeah. Or the things that I did to make sense, even like before I do old school, which is a stretch for somebody to grab someone's arm and to be able to walk. But so I would take the time to work that arm over and to hit that shoulder with the shoulder tackles and this and that. I tried to have things make sense. And I always tried to get people invested and forget everything else that we've told them about what sports entertainment and wrestling is and try and let them immerse themselves into what's going on. And that's the way I approach things. And I think there's some of that that's still applicable if you make the effort to do so. I think in large, there's just this, okay, everybody's in on it. And, you know, this is the way it is. And this is, but I think there is room for kayfabe still. I know everything's evolving and people have different perspectives on it, but that's mine. And
yeah,
I am, and I'll be the first to admit I'm a dinosaur.
You look great though. Come on.
Well, hey, I'm a dinosaur, but I'm a T-Rex. So, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Your relationship with Vince McMahon's, you know, well documented what you guys both mean to each other. But I'm really curious, what's the biggest lesson that you've taken away from your friendship with Vince?
There's several. I mentioned it last year in my speech at the Hall of Fame. Perception is reality. And, you know, I think sometimes he may have forgotten that, but I never did. And so that went a long way. Perception is reality, and how I dealt with people through my career. I didn't want anybody to ever think that I swerved them or that I had to go behind their back or do anything. What they saw is what they got, and I think that was probably a large factor in people always considering me the locker room leader. Everybody knew my relationship with Vince and Bruce and all of those, Pat Patterson, everybody knew my relationship there. But those same guys that I was on the road with, that I was hanging out with and partying with, you know, they knew what happened there was safe and there was never going to be any crossover. Don't let what we're doing at night get in the way of business. I mean, that was a really strong rule with me. I don't care what we do. Mm-hmm. Don't be late and work hard. That was the only thing that I don't get in trouble. Don't embarrass us. Don't be late to work and work hard. And, you know, I think that was why I garnered, I guess, the respect, because people trust me and they knew that the two never crossed. I was going to do what was best for business. And that's something that I learned from Vince. Because Vince, regardless of what anybody thinks, it deep in his heart, he's one of the boys. He really is. And he has that mentality. Things had to change, obviously. Whatever. Things changed when the business, when the company went, you know, public. There were a lot of changes that had to happen. Changes for the better. Everything's, you know, we've evolved into a whole, I mean, it is a, I think WWE is in a lot more now is regarded in the same way as other major sports franchise, you know, NBA or the NFL. We're on that, or if we're not on that level, we're really close. And the company is run that way. It's not that circus, you know, carny kind of thing anymore. It is a big, huge business, as everybody knows, and that's the way it's treated. The product has evolved, and it's evolved for the better.
I know everyone wants to talk to you about the streak, and I was there at WrestleMania 30 when it ended, but I want to ask about WrestleMania.
What happened?
30.
I don't remember.
We don't need to talk about that. It's I want okay. to ask you about WrestleMania 33 and what went into the plans of the loss to Roman Reigns, because I don't feel like that is given nearly as much attention.
Yeah, so I was extremely beat up. And, you know, I had toyed with the idea of hanging it up. I knew it that year when I got to the Rumble, I wasn't going to be ready. I wasn't going to be ready for Mania, but I'd already committed to the program. Didn't know what we were going to do yet. I just knew that I was going to work with Roman. And we got there that day, and I was like, man, I knew I was in bad shape. And my right hip, which I had surgery right after that to have it, a Birmingham hip resurface done after that. You know, it was the right thing to do. Not knowing if I was going to be able to come back again, and work anymore. So he was on the, you know, he was coming up and he was going to be the face of the company, and it was the right thing to do. And I didn't, you know, the streak had already been beat. So, it was the right thing to do business wise. Cause I didn't, like I said, I didn't know that I was going to come back again. I mean, the hat and the coat, all that being placed in the ring was 100% legitimate. At the end of it, I was done. And that was my way of saying goodbye. And yeah, it wasn't a planned or staged thing. And then I get my hip fixed. I get a call. They want me to work with Cena. I'm like, oh, crap, man. So I trained. I know I'm giving you more than you asked for, but so.
No, this is great.
It was like, okay, this is my chance. Because I was so disappointed. If you watched The Last Ride, you know how disappointed I was in my performance and that I put myself in that situation because I just couldn't physically get to where I needed to be for Roman. And how important that was. And I just, as hard as I tried, I mean, I trained like an animal, but I mean, my hip just held me back, and I'm not making excuses, but that's the extent of it. So now I've got a new hip and I'm like, oh man. And it's Cena. And I was like, oh crap. So Vince called me, said, what do you think? And I was like, I don't know. I've rehabbed my hip and I'm working out again, but I no plans of getting back in the ring. And so I said, give me a few weeks. So I get a ring shipped down here to Texas, and I rent a place and I put the ring in this building and I start training, and lo and behold, I could move again. So probably the hardest that I'd ever trained, not ever I trained, but the hardest I've been able to train in probably 10 years. And I was ready, man. I trained for like a 45 minute, just.
That match was so short though.
Well, yeah, I didn't know it was going to be short till I got there that day. So I've trained for a 45-minute war, right? And I'm like, all right, here is redemption. I am gonna light this place on fire. I felt good. And Vince calls me into his office and he goes, okay, he said, it's gonna be about 5 minutes. You're gonna squash him. I'm like, what? And you know, Vince, he just thought that was the fun. He goes, he knew how hard I'd been training. I mean, and I'm like, No. I said, I'm going. I said, I'm doing 30 or I'm not going out. And he's like, Mark, that's not what we need. And I'm like, no, Vince. I was like, where's John? Where's he at? So John comes in. He goes, oh, no. He goes, I talk mad smack about you, dude. Yeah, you need to beat me in quick and get this over with. I'm like, are you kidding me? I said, we've never worked on pay-per-view. Are you? And this is WrestleMania. Give me a break here. And they both ganged up on me. I threw my hands up. I was like, I can't believe it. And Vince just thought that was the funniest thing because, like I said, I trained like an ant. I was so unbearable at home. I mean, as far as my diet and training and just my protocols of, you know, recoup, you know, rehab, everything. I was a nightmare. And I get there and, yeah, 5 minutes. And it was like, that was it.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you did finally say goodbye to WWE and you hung it up and you had the farewell at Survivor Series 2020, was there a part of you that wished you were doing that in front of a sold out arena?
It's funny. I can see where you're coming with that, but I didn't, even though I knew I was done and it was over. Like I didn't want to cry. I didn't want to break down. You know, I was like, I was still trying to protect that character. And I was like, man, if I'm out here in front of a live audience, like, I mean, you saw how hard a time I had at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And that's another year or, you know, 2 years later, I would have been a wreck, man. I didn't want to retire. In my mind, in my heart, there's nothing more that I want to do than get in the ring and perform. You know, it was my body that just said, no, you're done, dude. We got everything out of this we can get. And it's time for you to move aside and let these guys come up. So I would have been a wreck if there had been people there. And, you know, all that kayfabing I did and protecting the character would have been destroyed in one promo. I would have been bawling.
Yeah, so. Triple H tells this great story about how everyone's trying to always get the Undertaker to break, and that the genesis of the people's elbow was The Rock creating this ridiculous move to try to get you to break. Do you remember that?
I do. You know what? I always thought that was the hokiest thing ever, but iconic, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And always to get me to laugh. I mean, there was such a time period there where I think that was the company's goal was to see who could get me to break. I mean, it was nonstop. We spent an hour and a half one night after a TV event in Seattle, them trying to get me to do the spin-a-rooney.
Yeah.
Booker T swerved me. We've been doing this same match after TV tapings. That was our advertised dark match. We've been doing it for weeks. And, you know, every night I'd get on there and say, hey, let's have Booker do a spin-a-rooney. Everybody go crazy. Well, Booker gets the microphone one night and completely swerved me, which was all set up. Vince was in on it. Everybody was in on it, you know. And he tells this sold-out crowd in Seattle that he wants to see a take-a-rooney. And I was like, you son of a bitch. Oh, I was pissed. And here they come, one after another. Just, I mean, everybody on the roster. Everybody, Rock comes down, Triple H comes down, Big Show's down, everybody's down and doing these absolutely awful spin-a-roonies. And I remember seeing my spot to leave because the ring is full of people now, right? And yeah, the crowd is going nuts trying to get me, everybody's chanting, take a Rooney and all this.
So good.
And I finally saw my spot and I jumped out of the ring and I headed back to the back. And I looked over my shoulder, and here comes Big Show. Vince had sent Big Show to come get me, right? And he come through that curtain. I said, you may kill me and eat me, but I am going to punch you in the face if you touch me. Vince never forgive me. Because I always told him, I said, I don't care who you are, what you do. You'll never get me to do that. And you don't tell Vince that you can't or won't do something because it becomes his passion in life. But I can honestly say he never got me to do a take-a-rooney. So – I won. That's the one battle I won with Vince.
As we wrap this up, you're one of the greatest of all time, but you're also so humble. Well, for a second, don't be humble. And I want to ask you, what do you think it was that made you have the success that you had in WWE?
I think it was the one thing that kind of really put the fire under me was being told by WCW that I would never draw money. I mean, to this day, that motivates me. Mm. You know, being told to my face that, hey, you're a great athlete, you're never going to make money. And, you know, so that, and then just the passion that I had for this. And then I knew right really early on that what I was doing with the character, I mean, that was such a gift. That character. I mean, it hit me. I mean, it just hit me right between the eyes. I mean, I knew when I got it, I was like, wow, this is special. This is really special. And then it just became part of me and I lived it. And I think the dedication to always being that guy everywhere I went, every time somebody saw me, it was that guy. And, you know, there was, Probably to a fault, you know, my personal life, everything kind of took a back seat to being the Undertaker, which is probably not fair. I mean, to my older kids, and I've made amends with them. But, I've heard different guys. I've heard Austin talk about this. You can't be, or we couldn't figure it out. A lot of guys do it now. But back then, we grinded everything, and everything that we were as human beings were poured into our characters. And it was probably the most important, you know, outside of my kids, it was the most important thing in my life was to be Undertaker and for that to be genuine and for people just to like, even if they didn't understand or they didn't know, or it's like, man, there's something different about that guy. It wasn't a character for a long time. It was just, I think that guy's really like that. Not whether I was like, whether I was a zombie or whether I was dead. They knew that I was a live human being, but they genuinely believed, I think, that I thought I was the Undertaker. And I think that came off, I think that's the way that I was perceived. Like, this dude is just different. And different from what everybody else was doing. So I don't know. I think it was just like the dedication to the craft and the character that, and nothing else came before that.
That's such a great answer. And you're so good at telling stories. And we're all looking forward to seeing you Friday, March 24th, the One Dead Man Show at the Cosmopolitan in Vegas. And I have just one final question for you, because I'm all about gratitude. It's such an important part of my life. And I wake up every day, I say out loud three things I'm grateful for, and I do it before I go to bed too. So what are three things in your life that you're grateful for right now?
I'm very grateful for my wife and my kids. And I'm grateful for the people that I realize that I don't get to where I'm at, or do I have the career that I had. One, without the people who paid their hard-earned money to come and see me perform, and two, the people that I performed with, because you don't get to the heights that that I got to. There you go. That's me not being humble. You don't get to that level without a lot of people staring at the lights for you.
Yeah.
And putting their gimmicks and everything else aside to make mine, you know, what it was. And that's something that, I probably don't say it enough, because I didn't do this by myself. And you can't, no one does. There has to be a lot of people involved to help get guys over and to stay over. So yeah, my family, my fans, and my coworkers.
I love it. Three great things. Super grateful to be able to share a conversation with you. So Undertaker, you are a legend, an honor to speak with you.
Man, anytime, Chris. I'd love to do this again, man. Thank you.
We'll do it in person next time.
Let's do it. You got my word.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, man. Did you hear that at the end? I have the Undertaker's word that we're going to do another one of these in person next time. I have no idea when or where this is going to happen, but sign me up for that. Hope that you enjoyed this conversation. Just please share this with somebody who you know is going to love this. Man, what a kind man. The Undertaker, Mark, whatever you want to call him, what a kind man that he is. Check out The Undertaker's One Dead Man Show, March 24th at the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas, March 31st in Los Angeles, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in Los Angeles during WrestleMania week. I'll see you at WrestleCon. I'll see you at a few other events. I'm not exactly sure which indie shows I'll be at, but looking forward to seeing you there. And I'll leave you with a quote from Warren Buffett, which I feel is really appropriate for The Undertaker and his career and the legacy that he left. Someone is sitting in the shade today because someone planted a tree a long time ago. How good is that? Be great, be grateful. We will see you on the next one for some more insight.